From the Land de Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 20th day of September 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Dave Jatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing from here in Champaign County, Illinois, will join us to discuss the agricultural energies. We'll talk with him about the price of diesel and the price of anhydrous ammonia. And then as we close out our time together, Don Day will be here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, to take a look at the weather forecast on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, December corn today at $6.92, up 13 and three quarters. The March 13 and a quarter higher at $6.96 and three quarters. And May corn up 12 and three quarters of a cent to settle at $6.97. November beans, $14.78 and three quarters, 17 and a half higher. January up 17 at $14.84 and a half. And the March contract, 16 and a quarter higher at $14.85 and a half. Bean meal up $12.60. The bean oil, 59 cents higher. Wheat futures were up 63 and a quarter in the lead December for the soft red at $8.93 and three quarters, and the hard red at $9.63, up 53 and a quarter cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $151 and seven and a half, up 17 and a half cents. Feeders at $180, two and a half cents, down $2.27 and a half, and lean hogs in the December contract at $88, 17 and a half cents, up 2.5 cents. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, now joins us to discuss what's happening in Chicago as it relates to agricultural commodities. Hi, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon.
Thank you for being with us. Tell me a little bit about wheat today. I don't know that the trade really knew what was happening to begin with. Can you tell me how that transpired?
Hey, sometimes even as they weren't just in the trade, didn't know what was happening for a while this morning. You know, the news came out a little later today that Russia is going to be holding some referendums in some of the areas they still occupy, and are highly Russian citizens or Russian citizens that would like to possibly like to come back to Russia about reintroducing them back in as a Russian territory there after these referendums. And that, of course, sort of signals that Russia's not done fighting for territory, and the war will probably continue on, and that's going to, you know, maybe make it a little rougher to get wheat out of the Ukraine and out of the Russian area like that. And that was what we were told the big rally in wheat was. And, of course, yesterday had been such a big down day that it was able to, you know, look a lot bigger than the other rallies in corn and beans.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that just from my own background traveling to Ukraine. So these areas in eastern Russia, sometimes the population there will speak Russian as opposed to Ukraine, and they may very well vote to, if in this referendum, if it's fair, that is, to join Russia and leave Ukraine. And if they do, then Russia says, hey, we've got this part of Ukraine and it's voted itself in, and now we have real reason to continue to challenge Ukraine as it relates to the war. So that could be an issue, and it would be related, of course, to wheat, but mostly it just means the war will continue. So given all of that, soybeans and corn managed to follow up. Is there any reason for all of this to follow through in the next couple of days?
Well, you know, the funds were big buyers today. They bought about 10,000 wheat, 8,000 beans, and around 8,000 corn. You know, we did see Michael Cordner drop his corn yield a bushel, and we did see him drop his bean yield half a bushel along the way. We did see the crop conditions did tick down yesterday. Not much, but they did tick down. We are hearing some areas where, you know, down in the mid-south, we're hearing that a lot of the irrigated corn is coming in 30 to 40 bushels under their APH. That's going that way, but we're hearing some beans in our area going 70, 75. So, you know, and then in some mid-50s. So a lot of variance and stuff yet, but some real good crops out there different places. But, you know, I think that it's, you know, not enough beans harvested yet to get a good idea. The crop rating did drop yesterday in the beans to 55% versus 50. But we, you know, with everything we're looking at with China not really buying from us, it's more looking right now at South American planting weather and whether they're going to be able to get everything planted that's going to be big competition does what the extra acres are putting out this year.
Does the market expect China to come back into the U.S. market and recognize that the Argentine policies caused the recent non-purchases from the U.S. To happen?
You know, there's always hope that this is going to come back in, and they feel that, you know, depending on how and when things are available out of Argentina and whatever along the way, we're still the most reliable supplier of corn and beans to them. So, you know, will they come back? But we're the second now rather than the primary market, and that is what puts a lot of question marks in everybody's head along the way. So, you know, one of the things, too, is looking ahead, how available is fertilizer going to be to get the yields that we're looking for? Because there's a real question mark about nitrogen and whether how available it's going to be and how priced it's going to be.
Yeah, complications because of the war there in Russia and Ukraine, and then with President Biden making a comment about coming to the military aid of Taiwan should China invade. That all has been playing in this marketplace.
Yeah, and that's not a positive thing for our extended corn and bean exports to China, especially when South America is ramping up their production this year. And, you know, they are getting some rains down there. They are planning on planting more acres. And, you know, like I said, we saw the majority of the export business was done out of Argentina on their government switching and giving a better exchange rate to some of the farmers to sell now. So, you know, they got like 15 loads in and we got one or two last week. So, it's taken away some of our early export business.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
Thank you, Todd.
We're looking forward to talking with you on Thursday for Commodity Week. That's Wayne Nelson. He is at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 87% of the corn crop around the nation has reached the dent stage. The five-year average is 88%. 40% of the crop is mature. The five-year average there is 45%. And 7% of the corn crop has been harvested. The five-year average, 8%. The condition of the crop, 41% good. And 11% excellent. That's down one percentage point from the previous week in those two categories combined. 42% of the soybeans are now dropping leaves, and normally that's at 47% for the rolling five-year average. 3% of the crop has been harvested, normally 5% on the five-year average. The condition of the crop, 46% good, 9% excellent. Winter wheat planting has now progressed to 21% complete. The five-year average is 17%. Of that crop that has been planted, 2% has emerged, and that is right on the five-year average. Now, here's Steve Parn from USDA NASS with an update on conditions in the state of Illinois.
Last week was warm and dry in most parts of Illinois. Rainfall averaged 1/2 inch across the prairie state, and that was more than 0.3 inch below normal. Temperatures averaged 68.2 degrees, more than 1 degree above normal for this time of year. There were 6.1 days suitable for field work around Illinois last week, and topsoil moisture was reported as 10% very short, 14% short, 61% adequate, and 15% surplus as of Sunday. 41% of soybean acres were dropping leaves compared to 51% 1 year ago and 39% for the five-year average. Soybean conditions declined slightly and were rated 10% very poor to poor, 23% fair, and 67% good to excellent. 92% of the Illinois corn crop has reached the dough stage or beyond. That compares to 98% normally. 77% of acres have reached the dent stage compared to 91% normally. 27% of corn acres are mature compared to 51% normally, and 2% of corn acres have been harvested compared to 7% normally. The condition of the Illinois corn crop also declined and was reported as 9% very poor to poor, 20% fair, and 71% good to excellent. Moving on to hay. The third cutting of alfalfa hay is 83% finish compared to 96% for the five-year average. Finally, pasture conditions declined and were rated 19% very poor to poor, 35% fair, and 46% good to excellent. I would like to thank all the people that responded to the Crop Progress and Conditions Survey this week. We really appreciate your assistance in telling the story of Illinois agriculture. This has been Steve Parn with the Heartland Region of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
There were no audio updates from the states of Iowa or Minnesota, but we do have their state updates in text, and I'll read some of that to you. Last week, widespread rainfall came across Iowa, but still there were 5.8 days suitable for field work there. Topsoil moisture conditions rated 14% very short, 28% short, and 57% adequate. Corn in Iowa in the dense stage or beyond was 93% as of Sunday. That's 5 days ahead of the five-year average. 42% of Iowa's corn crop was mature, 2 days behind last year, but equal to the average. And harvest of the state's corn crop began with 2% now complete. Corn was 64% good to excellent in Iowa. 75% of the soybeans were coloring and beyond, 3 days behind last year. Soybeans dropping leaves in Iowa at 30%, about a week behind last year and 3 days behind the five-year average. Soybean condition remained 63% good to excellent. In Minnesota, there were 6 days suitable for field work last week. Topsoil moisture levels rated 7% very short, 26% short, and 65% adequate. The corn had reached the dense stage to the point of about 86%. Corn mature was at 21%. That's a full week behind the five-year average. Corn condition in Minnesota, 3% very poor, 6% poor, 28% fair, and 49% good. 14% of the Minnesota corn crop is said to be in excellent condition. Soybean coloring reached 76%. Soybeans dropping leaves at 31%. That's 5 days behind the average and 63% good to excellent for the soybeans in Minnesota. And that's a look at the weekly crop progress. Our thanks go to the statisticians who normally provide us with updates each and every week of the growing season. It's a Tuesday. We always check in on the agricultural energies. Dave Chatterton is here from Strategic Farm Marketing this week. Hi, Dave. Thank you for being with us. Let's start with the price of crude oil. It was well above $100, and now it's in the 80s. What difference does that make?
Yeah, Todd, it's been, you know, it's been a risk-off environment in the energy complex. I think we've seen a rotation of what's called speculative capital kind of out of the complex, very similar to what we've experienced in grain in this, you know, this inflation play that lifted us to the highs for grain in spring and for the energy market in that June period have kind of disappeared here a little bit. And the angst about the global economy has really taken over here. And what we're getting, you know, a situation where I guess the worry about recession has kind of offset tight supplies globally in the energy market. We have seen inventories build here in the U.S., particularly in crude oil. So we've seen some response. Crude oil inventories in the U.S. are now 3% above where they were last year, only 2% below where they were against the five-year average. Crude oil is down in that 83 area. That's the lowest that we've been since early in the year, really since February. And we've seen a rotation down. What we haven't seen, we've seen that same or a similar rotation in the gasoline market, Todd, but we haven't quite got there in heating oil prices or diesel prices. They are lower than where we started, you know, from the peaks, but they haven't turned out as quickly as what we found in crude, as the inventories there have just struggled to rebuild.
So why is that the case? Because diesel, my understanding is, it's just part of the crack, right? So why is diesel in such short supply? Do we know?
Yeah, I think it's two things. One is that we've got a very vibrant export market. If you think about it, in Europe and the U.S. pledge to, you know, replace a lot of that substantial Russian supply that would typically go into Europe. We've seen our exports, particularly, you know, on all the products, but particularly in the distillate category, be at or near record levels really all year to this point. And I think that will continue to be the case as we go forward, as we prepare for winter. Secondly, is that gasoline demand in the U.S. has now gone flat. We had the post-COVID or post-pandemic recovery here. We got to a point where we just peaked above where we were coming into the pandemic. And then since that, we've fallen back as the economy and the employment situation have changed just a little bit. So gasoline inventories in the U.S., very similar to what we talked about in crude. They're down 2% from where they were a year ago. They're about 5% below the five-year average. But for a refiner in the U.S. to make that, you know, to make the distillery that would prop our inventories up, they have to make the gasoline that goes along with that. And I think they're very sensitive, Todd, to not, you know, getting the inventory situation there too heavy. So when you take that barrel of crude and you put it through a typical U.S. refinery, you're getting two barrels or two parts of gasoline for every one part of distillate you get. And then you split that distillate barrel into other things like, you know, jet fuel and kerosene and heating oil and all the products that go along with that. So it takes a little bit longer, and it takes a lot of gasoline production to get our distillate inventories up. You know, the durability of the economy and the transportation industry, I think, inventories, but of course the pricing that goes along with that.
So logistics in the U.S. supply chain would be driven a lot by diesel fuel, and farmers will need a lot of diesel fuel for the harvest season. Are there any recommendations from you about what to do as it relates to pricing this diesel or covering the risk if they have already priced it?
Yeah, Todd, I think the risk here is probably to the upside. We're in this situation this time of year where the tropics have been a little bit slow to this point, but are now starting to heat up just a little bit. We had Fiona as the first hurricane that kind of threatened to maybe come into the Gulf, didn't quite make it or won't quite make it, but we've got something to watch there. So producers should be, I think, you know, either having their tanks full or having their fuel contracted for what they need for fall, and even taking a look out and seeing what's available for spring. We don't necessarily have our foot on the gas pedal as far as covering spring needs, but definitely something that we need to take a look at here. Prices are a little bit lower. I think the average price that we had for Illinois farm diesel last week through the state as an average was about $3.46 a gallon for red diesel. So not as cheap by historical terms, but certainly I think the risk there, you know, more upside price risk than downside. So any kind of weakness that you can find among your suppliers or any opportunity to contract it in kind of discount or what you feel is a favorable price, something that you should be looking at here even as we're winding into harvest.
The other item that producers will be worried about and have been for some time, especially if they are thinking that they need to contract still, I suppose, anhydrous ammonia or nitrogen for fall application of some sort or even for next spring, is the price of natural gas, its primary input. And of course, that is an issue too related to the war in Ukraine with Russia.
Yeah, and Todd, and I don't know, just for listeners who might not be aware, today we got more news on Russia. We got a situation where it looks like Putin is going to hold a referendum on annexing the Ukrainian territories that he holds currently into Russia proper. And in doing so, it allows him to up his military campaign. He's been on his heels just a little bit. And in doing so, that battle with Europe and about the fertilizer, excuse me, about the natural gas supply going in has been a very hot topic here. We're looking at the production cost of anhydrous in Europe proper, something like $2,500 per ton, where in the U.S. we're still running in that $600 to $700 per area, you know, production cost. So the export arb is certainly open, you know, as we go forward, and supplies for next spring in particular are a little bit in question. Producers have been active, you know, locking in fall supplies here, mostly between 1,100 and 1,300 anhydrous. We've seen some go as high as $1,500. Finding a price for next spring is a little bit challenging, but I would urge producers to do what they can to mitigate the risk on that going forward and be able to, you know, look for a place to contract spring and look for different, you know, you may have to look outside your normal supply chain to do that and find someone willing to make you that price for next spring. But definitely, I think, again, just like we talked about in diesel fuel, the risk there from a price standpoint tends to skew to the upside.
By mitigating risk, I know you have some other things in mind, but one of the ways to do that is to make cash, or is to make sales of some sort for the corn crop to be harvested in 2023.
Yeah, it's certainly part of it. You know, I think if you're looking at locking up inputs, you certainly need to look at what your margins are and what that means to your grain price. I know there's certain things that you can lock up today, certain things that you don't know about spring prices and what things will do. But, you know, we're in a right now where we've seen some producers, it's a minority of producers, but there's product available in the fall crop insurance product called margin protection that does allow you to lock in some very favorable prices and, you know, and be able to mitigate that risk. Beyond that, cash grain sales are a good way to start looking, whether you want to do those via an HTA, via futures and options, or via a cash sale to an elevator. But any way that helps you lock that margin per se, Todd, is I think something that we're looking at. The price volatility has really become the rule in a number of markets. So whether it's the grain complex, the energy complex, or commodities or equities in general, as we look forward and look at the global, you know, kind of economic, you know, environment that we're working with, it's likely that volatility is going to stay with us here. And, you know, I've said for a long time, I'm not so concerned about the actual fundamentals, supply and demand fundamentals of the grain market or even the fuel market, as I am what can happen with the global economy and what that can mean for money moving in and out of our markets and how it could affect price.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Dave Chatterton is with Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Blue skies here. How about where you are?
Yeah, blue skies. There's a lot of blue sky over a lot of the nation's midsection and part of the Western Plains states. But we do see clouds, and we do see some shower activity bringing some needed rain to parts of central and northern California, parts of Oregon, some of those wildfire areas getting some rain. That's part of a system that's connected to a cool front that's going to come out of British Columbia and Alberta and push across the northern plains and into the central plains here over the next couple of days. So that will bring temperatures down as we get into the next few days and give us a little hint of fall.
It'll feel like a fairly dramatic change, but it simply is that time of year, I suppose.
Yeah, when you look at the calendar, here we are. We're now into the third week, and fall officially starts on Thursday. And so I guess we should expect some episodes of some cooler weather. I think cooler weather is the best way to describe it. It's going to be a bit of a cool down, nothing dramatic. Certainly we don't see anything that's going to be reaching freezing potential anywhere in the key growing areas. But certainly it is a sign of some cooler weather, more of typical seasonal weather as we go towards the end of September.
I know the folks in North Dakota particularly were saying that they thought they would have a decent crop if they could get some sunshine and warmth through the month of September. How have they done so far?
They've gotten it. Temperatures across the northern plains, central plains have been above average, and that stretches up into southern parts of Manitoba and Saskatchewan as well. So they've had a September so far. Yeah, there's been one cold front, but nothing that was terribly bad, and temperatures since then have been above average.
They're trying to pile the growing degree days up, or the GDDs, before they get frosted at some point, which usually happens in that part of the world way sooner than here. What are your expectations for the Delta region? They had been wet. Crops been coming out slowly there.
Yeah, well, right now, at least, let's say for the next 7, 8, or 9 days, Delta region really doesn't have a lot of weather. And that goes into the southern plains and parts of Texas that have gotten a lot of precipitation over the last month. The big wild card is the Gulf of Mexico. There is going to be some type of tropical storm or hurricane, likely a hurricane, in the Gulf of Mexico during the second half of next week. We're real confident about that. We've got a really good pattern setting up. And we could see, this is typical this far out, but we could see hurricane activity from the Florida Peninsula and as far west as Texas, and maybe somewhere in between that would include the Delta. So that could be a bit of a game changer with precipitation second half of next week.
Now, we had a pretty good rainfall here a couple of nights ago. That will have kept producers in some areas from moving. However, harvest has begun, and I'd like to get back in the field. Will this cold front that travels through, and I know it will be in parts of Illinois on Thursday, cause much rainfall as it crosses and keep people out of the field, or is it just a spit and shine here and there?
I think it's going to be more of a spit and shine. There will certainly be some showers, some light rain showers, but there's nothing really moist with this system that's going to get into the Midwest that I see that's going to be anything to keep folks out of the fields.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.